Well, it's time for In the Chains, the UK-based podcast for amateur disc golfers. Get ready for course reviews, disc reviews, and the latest news and updates from the disc golf world. Your hosts will also talk about their own progression and have a lot of fun along the way. And now, here they are, two Brits and one Yang. Let's get started.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a brand new episode of In the Chains. We are your favorite disc golf podcast, bringing you the latest from the disc golf world, including news, interviews, and all things disc golf. My name is Dennis, and I'm your favorite American, and with me are my two favorite Brits, the beans on my toast, because that's a thing in this country. Well, it sounds disgusting. Like, why would you put beans on toast?
Cheesy beans on
toast. Yeah, cheesy beans on toast.
Oh, my God.
A bit of Tabasco.
Oh, God, what's wrong with this country?
Do you have beans like us in America?
You know what? We do have, I would associate those with baked beans.
Yeah.
And ours are very close, but they do taste different. I'll actually have to get you guys a cans and let you try American baked beans and see how what you think.
They are different. They've probably got a load of illegal chemicals in that we're not allowed.
Well, how do you think that we stay so
athletic,
fat and obese? Yeah. I'm in shape. Round is a shape. So, anyways, guys, everybody listening, listen. We have a super special episode this week. We had the pleasure of sitting down with Sam Stevens and Paul Studdard from the BDGA. We asked them all the fun and easy questions and basically just blew smoke up their ass for an hour. Just kidding. No, seriously. We asked them the tough questions that I think many of our listeners have been wondering about. And we grilled them. We spoke to them for an hour. And so we have this episode is basically that. But don't you guys worry. For those of you that are just listening to the podcast, so you can hear Bowen's brummy, grumpy voice talk about the news, we're going to have that for you guys, but that's going to come out on Saturday. We will have our normal episode with all the things that you guys enjoy. The news, the topic, Duffy's question.
I've just had a really good idea. If putting out Saturday gives everybody the opportunity to listen on the way to Bedworth.
Yeah.
So how about that?
And then it's they almost can give like you some shit when they're at the tournament.
It's like we planned it that way rather than last 30 minutes we just argued about what we were going to do this week.
They can give you some shit about how bad it is at the tournament then, can't they?
Oh, so you're just saying that because you're not going to be there.
I reckon I'll beat 72 over there. I've got a sneaky suspicion.
Well, Bowen holds the record for the worst round ever.
I'll take that.
That's a good record. It's a record.
Yeah, exactly. One more than you two wankers are.
Fair enough. You got us there.
You win or lose, between now you look at it.
You win. Oh, that's actually really funny. All right, so without further ado, everybody, here's our interview with the BDGA. All right, everybody, we have some special guests with us today. With us today is Sam and Paul from the British Disc Golf Association. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Good. This is going to be a fun interview. We are doing this via Zoom. We're going to try to do the best with the audio as we can. But today we're just going to talk to these guys. We got some questions. We know that everybody that listens to the show has questions and they sometimes yell at their computer screen. So now is our chance to get these questions answered. So first and foremost, before we begin, please tell us who you are and what you do for the BDGA.
Okay, sure. Well, I mean, first things first, I think it's worth just saying what the BDGA is. And the BDGA is its members. So disc golfers throughout the UK who would like to be a member of the BDGA. And we are people who have volunteered, members like yourselves who've decided we'd like to help and volunteer to run some things. But in terms of what the British Disc Golf Association does, it aims to coordinate disc golf in the UK, facilitate growth in the game at all levels of ability by providing a platform for national level communication, discussion and development.
And what is your role in the BDGA, Sam? Like, what do you do for them?
So I, in November, I took on the role as national director. So previously, Tom Lowe's was national director and I was secretary for a couple of years. And I took on national director role just in November. So in terms of what that means, basically the board of five people, so that's communications director, competitions director, treasurer and secretary. We've got different tasks within that and my role is to sort of oversee that and provide some direction.
Now, are these positions voted upon by the members? Are they picked internally? How do you get the positions that you are?
Well, that is a very good question. In the last few years, it's been about who's been willing to volunteer and to take on the work and put their name forward. And yes, there is a vote. It's open to all four members to vote for the positions. But in recent years, it's been a case of who has put their name forward and people have said, okay.
Well, that seems easy. Why can't our elections be like that? And Paul, how about you? What do you do? What's your stance? Who are you? Why are you so damn good at disc golf?
So my name's Paul Stoddart. I am the Director of Communications for the British Disc Golf Association. I've been in this role for just over 2 years now. I started off for about 6 months or so helping my predecessor, Richard Wood. And then he stepped aside and let me sort of take over the role. And I've just been looking to evolve and catch up with technology, really. And as Sam said, it's we all volunteer for this. As I spoke to you guys the other day, and a lot of people know me, I am by trade a chef. This is not something that, you know, I've never taken a degree in any social media work. I'm just here to try and, you know, make it a better place and build bridges for people. I hope that comes across that way.
That's awesome. Well, you're definitely building bridges. You're helping. I know that Duffy runs our Instagram page, Bowen runs the Facebook page, and they're on it constantly. So we're a small thing. And then to multiply that, you know, tenfold, a hundredfold has to not be easy. So it's tough.
Especially as we don't have to be professional, whereas you guys do. One thing I want to know is there's a bit of a running joke on the podcast about me being tight. So I don't part with my money easily. So what I would like to know is where I know I'm a member. Dennis is a member. I don't know if Bowen, are you a member? No,
I'm not a member. No.
Okay,
you're fired.
You're fired on. Yeah, that wasn't a call out. I just didn't know. But my question is where does my what happens to my 10 quid?
Sure. I mean, that's a fair question. I think it's worth saying that the membership changed back in November following the AGM. Previously, if you played in a tournament, membership was free. And that was done initially to try and increase the number of members. But what we wanted to do is generate some funds that could help support some of our strategic goals and aims. So they can be broadly split into two. There's fixed costs, stuff that we have to pay for as an organisation, such as web security. For example, we're also a member of Sports and Recreation Alliance, who help offer guidance and training for organisations. We sometimes have costs for the AGM. Sometimes when we've had them physically, we've had to rent a space. We've got some equipment in storage. Yeah, these are all fairly fixed costs, but we've also got some things which are related to investment, things that we would like to support to help grow disc golf in the UK. So that might be, for example, we donated some money to the Scottish Disc Golf Association last year for towards some baskets for a course. We've donated some money per female player at the Women's Global event. We are some key strategic events that are sort of headliners for the BDJ. We've put some money towards in the past. And there's also opportunities for people to apply for money from the development fund. This is something that we're growing and we're trying to do more with and use it more strategically. But we wanted to create more income to be able to put more money back into the sport. It's not all sitting in a bank somewhere or all of my arms rolling around in cash.
Yeah.
How Although do you
that gold lamp behind you though? That's pretty nice.
How do you relate to the PDGA then? What's the sort of same things and different things that you do?
So the PDGA, they obviously govern disc golf in general, and that's to do with things like the ratings and helping drive the rules and the global network of disc golf. BDGA is clearly just focused on British disc golf and what can we do to support everyone in the UK, whether they're a beginner, it's grassroots, or whether it's an event that scores some points towards an end of year event. All of that stuff has to be done somewhere, and it's not done by the PDJ, that's done by us as volunteers.
And that's worth backing up as well with, even the PDGA require volunteers. And the BDJ have had a link with that in the past with the, if you go back far enough, only a few years ago now, I suppose, we had Neil Webber, aka Bruce, who used to be the BDJ National Director, helped write the rule book for disc golf. So, yeah, I mean, we've, Derek Robbins, he's a Hall of Famer and has been involved in countrywide and globally this sport. So, yeah, I mean, it comes down to volunteers at the end of the day.
So as a country, England isn't this niche corner of the world. I mean, the players here, the people involved in the sport, especially the ones that have been doing it for a while, they have seated roots in the PDGA and disc golf as a sport.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Question. I was just thinking about what to follow up with that. Absolutely, that is the case. And the whole of the UK has got a long history in this. And the best people to talk to you about that, or when you get a chance to grab Derek Robbins and hear some of his old stories from when he started as BDGA member number one and what it was like back then. Things have come a long way since then, and since I've been playing in the last 10 years, it's gone from an organization that helps organize a tour of maybe 10 events on 6 or 7 different courses to all these events, tons of members, maybe 10 times as many members, and trying to help support the growth, which is exploding, which is wonderful to see, something we're all being delighted with.
I mean, go ahead, Paul.
I was just going to add to that I think, earlier you asked about what the future is for the BDJ, and I think that it's going to evolve in the same way that disc golf has evolved. The PDGA was the governing body, wasn't the governing body, sorry, for disc sports. It was always the World Flying Disc Federation. And then that has also evolved. Now you've had the PDGA, but now we also have PDGA Europe has come along to try and, because as disc golf has grown throughout Europe and this part of the world. So that has evolved in its own right. But we now also have the European Flying Disc Federation as well. And the BDGA's sits under the banner of the UK Ultimate, but purely because of recognition from the Olympics and the IOC. There's a lot of cogs that make it all happen.
You're also in dangerous territory there, Stoddy, of trying to get every single one of those links correct, because it is incredibly complex.
It is very complex, yeah.
Obviously, everybody knows how convoluted the Europeans like to make their democracy. do we have, like the PDGA Europe, do we have representatives from the BDGA? Do you have a representative that sits in and has votes on that PDGA Europe, or does it not work like that?
Yeah, we have a country coordinator. Every country has a country coordinator if you are affiliated with the PDGA. And if you are in the US, you have a state coordinator, as some of their states are about the same size as our countries. I think if you're in Canada, I think they have a state representative as well. And then, other parts of the world as it's growing, like Australia and Japan and places. Again, I think also have country coordinators. We have a bridge with them there.
Yeah, it's worth highlighting that's mainly a communication avenue. It doesn't mean that the people who are country coordinators sit on any kind of decision-making board, or it's if there's something to be shared, it goes from them to the country coordinator. Sometimes that is the national director, sometimes it's an appointed other person.
Okay, but at least that voice is heard and also can relay information. So it's not like a small island country like this is going to get left behind and not, not know what's going on in the rest of mainland Europe.
Leave our country alone.
Okay. I love your country, though. We want to segue. We've been doing really good on segues here. And, we talk about the growth of the BDGA. And obviously, COVID has had this huge boost, right? We've seen this huge boost in disc golf. How are you guys going to accommodate the influx of new players into the sport, new members to the BDGA? Like, how are you guys accommodating those new players?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And I think it's fair to say that this is not an easy answer. The influx of players is obviously fantastic. It's great to see. It's what we've all been longing for and trying to encourage for so long. But obviously, when things grow quickly, you've got to make sure that you can adapt and change. And that adaption and changing takes a bit of time. What I would say is that, to try and encourage and promote the sport, we've been looking at how the BDGA Tour works, looking at a potential new structure, trying to think about how other sports do that. So one of the things we've been looking at is more of a pyramid structure where you have grassroots disc golf at the bottom. Maybe that's focused around clubs, local and regional events. Maybe that's aimed at encouraging new players in. And then from there, you grow into national events and major events. So we looked at setting up the majors with the other parts of the UK. Unfortunately, it hasn't moved forward this year because of COVID, but we will be looking to make that happen next year. We also want to encourage more people to put on events. So that's the biggest challenge we've got at the moment. Historically, we TDs haven't necessarily always sold out, which has meant that they've been reticent to put on events. But we think more events now is fantastic because more people are going to go. They will hopefully they will all sell out and people will see that as a reason to go to them. And we're trying to make that as easy as possible moving forward with how we can support TDs in doing that. That might mean having focused events, some towards open, some towards amateurs. We've got female only events or age protected events. Whatever people feel they would like, we will consider and see how we can make it work.
I'll add to that there's again the BDGA is always evolving to try and accommodate all of this new stuff. Now, obviously, you guys have only been playing for a year or less, but unfortunately, you took it up during the pandemic, so there wasn't a huge amount of events for you to attend straight off the bat. But over the years, as Sam said, when he and I started playing, we used to run, or the BDJ, not myself, but the BDJ used to run 10 events across the whole of the UK. And yeah, if we had sort of 40, 50 people turn up, that was great numbers. But we didn't have 10 courses. So you know, we would go to some of these places twice, like Quarry Park or Burnlaw. And then as we've got more people playing, more courses have come along. As we've got more courses, we have more events. As we have more events, we get more people. So then we've changed, you know, the tour system has changed quite a few times over the years to accommodate the growth. And, you know, we've been fortunate enough to see the likes of the Quake Tour start up in Scotland. You know, there's enough players up there now to support that. That is brilliant. That's been running for a few years now. There's enough players up there now that they're able to form the Scottish Disc Golf Association. Brilliant. So now, you know, at the same time as that was happening, we was having smaller, what we called series down here, that were feeder events into the tour. And then again, you know, the Midlands One Day Series, the Down South Series. What was the other one called? It had a long silly name that I can't even remember now. But there's been a few of those over the years. And then last year we had plans to change the setup again and move back to a more traditional style that we would have known of. You know, would have been new and shiny to you guys. But then tie in with that the British and Irish majors, so that there was more pro and am style events. Unfortunately, COVID came along, so this year we've had to keep it as flexible and open as we possibly can, to try and encourage TDs to put on events to facilitate the, you know, the growth, and you know, all of these new players, they're hungry for it. They want to play competitive golf like yourselves. They want to see what that side of it is all about. So this year, I think it will be a little different, to maybe what we'd hoped for, but hopefully going forward, you know, we're going to plan well now for next year and beyond. Looking at the numbers, in the different divisions that we're seeing, you know, I've mentioned this several times to guys recently that, you know, you've only got to look at the Longford that Ian McDougall's running. There's 45 unrated players attending that event. That's 45 people that have never played an event before, let alone have a PDJ rating. If you'd have said that to me last year, I'd have laughed at you. Yeah, there's no way anybody would have believed that was possible. And yet that's exactly where we are now. So we recognize that, you know, we learn from that. We talk about it like we are now, and we move forward.
Do you sort of see in the future it being like a two-tier system where you have the pros on their own tour and then sort of the amateurs playing other lesser events? Do you think that's the way it's looking in the UK?
Well, I think the first things first is that we don't see any of them as lesser events as such.
Okay.
We want to provide events that cater for everyone, and we have to see what divisions those people are playing in and adapt as we understand that. So for example, if it proves that there's enough people to have a master's tour, an age protected tour, or a set of events that are affiliated with it, then of course we'll support that, because that's fantastic for the sport. Likewise, if there's so much interest in the amateur divisions, that, you know, the events can never cater for enough, then, you know, maybe there needs to be some separation of that as well. You know, we're open to see what happens, and to take the information that comes to us and be able to discuss and make some decisions following that information coming to us.
Yeah, I would say that if the membership wants that, then that's what will happen. You know, we will continue to keep having these discussions with the likes of yourselves and with our other members. And if there's enough guys that say, you know, we just want to have a pro cash, because that's where it sort of falls down at the moment, is we have a lot of these, so many new players that still love the idea of attending your first event, getting that player pack, getting that special disc with a stamp on it. You know, I'm no different. I still love collecting discs. I've got bundles of them. But a lot of the other guys that have been playing for even 5 years or more, they know what they throw. They just want to compete for bragging rights, for titles, and for payouts at the end of the day. So, yeah, it probably along those lines, if that's what people say they want.
Okay.
Yeah, we do have to obviously take into account all of that, plus other things like, do we have enough tournament directors to be able to do that? So if we can only offer a split of, you know, two separate directions of amateur and open tours, if we've got enough TDs who are willing to do that. So, you know, this is a great opportunity in saying, look, if you'd like to run an event, get in contact. We'd love to hear from you. Or Phil Wood, our competitions director, would love to hear from you. Yeah, and he'd be happy to talk about ideas you may have. But we need those TDs to be able to have a chance of doing that, and also to put on events for everyone. What if it doesn't change, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, Dennis, you were talking about becoming a tournament director, weren't you?
Was I? I have a lot on my plate. That'll be a sidebar conversation. All right. So I feel like Tom Brokaw. Those were the easy questions, guys. Right. That was the easy stuff. I think now the more difficult questions answer the, what I hear through the grapevine are the bitches, the complaints, the gripes that people are having. So we're going to get into this lab, and please be honest with us. Let us know. So one of the main things that I keep hearing, why did you guys cancel the MA4 from getting tour points this year and not being able to go to the British Championships? You know, with the influx of all the new players who will probably enter MA4, how come now we're only stopping? You have to be MA3 or higher to get tour points. Because what I feel like that's going to do is also those lesser players that want to play, that want to improve, are now going into a division that they're not ready for because they're just trying to get tour points. So why did you guys get rid of the MA4 points?
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Again, I think just putting it in context, the PDGA currently offer, I believe, 47 divisions. And obviously at one event, if we were to put on all of those divisions, we've got divisions of one or two. So straight away at the start, we have to make a decision about what we can include and what we can't. So at the same time, there's been a growing number of requests for other divisions, and such as age protected brackets. And with the sort of encouragement of this pyramid structure of tour events, where we're looking at local events, club events, regional events, and then going up to national events and then the majors, we thought to satisfy those that are wanting more age-protected brackets, we would aim to encourage the new players in MA4 through the regional and local events. And that means that we made the decision to include MP50 instead of MA4. And the hope was that those people who are new and starting disc golf will want to progress and then move up. It's something aspirational straight away. So you can start local and you can aim to improve and move into the regional, to the national level tour events. The other thing that I think we need to sort of talk about in this context is that MA4 can be quite a changeable division. You know, you get a lot of people who start disc golf at the same time, and a lot of them all progress at different levels. So we have found that historically that there are scenarios where it becomes about who's progressing the quickest. And in some cases we've seen, or we've heard people say that they get put off because they're not necessarily competing people that are in the same ability anymore. Some people maybe are better than that MA4. And because people can progress very quickly, it's a difficult division to have always fair competition with. So we wanted to encourage that to be local and people to aspire and grow into the national events.
I don't want to sound ageist, but my sort of feeling is with if you're including more age protected brackets, you're excluding more people than you're actually including, because the age protected people can play in other divisions, whereas people who are younger can't actually play in the age protected divisions. So to me personally, it seems like it's a bit of a not, I don't know, it just seems like it's excluding people more than including people.
Well, I think, I mean, that's obviously a good point. I think what I would say is that if your capacity is limited to the capacity of the course, so if you're allowed, if you can take 72 players, then straight away you've got an issue with having to select what divisions take place. So if there's 10 divisions in a tournament, that means you may have a situation where there's only 7 per division. So straight away we have to work out what we can limit. And in the future, for example, we might be able to have 2 separate events where there's 10 divisions in each or 5 divisions in each. But at the moment, if we've got 1 end of year championships, we can only really fit sensibly 10 divisions whilst still maintaining competition. And when you imagine, for example, how many MA4s there are at the moment, you know, if there's only a couple of them who could attend, then it's excluding lots of people anyway. You know, it's really difficult challenge to work out. So that's just where we got to with that decision this year. We've had a few years of people wanting to include the Masters divisions in championships. And we wanted to encourage more grassroots support for the newer players, because we've also had people who've been put off early on by having to travel so far for events when they're just working out, oh, am I really into this? Is this something that I really, really love? Do I want to travel a couple of 100 miles and pay for accommodation? Or do I want to play something nearby that will fit in around my family and, you know, I can do it in a day? So we've had quite a few different perspectives on that over the years, and we've got to take a decision on that. And it may be that changes in the future. We may have 2 sets of events that support more divisions.
Either way, it sounds like it wasn't an easy decision. I think a lot of people who have this complaint just thought that maybe you guys said, oh, you know, those are the worst players, so we don't need them. We're going to focus on the better. I'm doing air quotes, everybody. Do on those better players. But obviously, after asking you guys, it's not the case. So there, it sounds like a lot of thought, a lot of time went into this. And so thank you for clearing that up.
I was going to say, just to add to that further, the championships only started about 5 or 6 years ago. And it started as a result of wanting to adjust the tour structure to try and be more inclusive of different kinds of events. There was a growing number of one-day events, which were really good at supporting new players. So at that time, the tour structure, this was before Paul and I were on the board, but at that point, the tour structure was changed to try and make it possible to include one-day events as well, which I think looking back on it, it must have been fairly successful because numbers have still grown and that has been successful. But, you know, at a certain point, people obviously, the voices override the positives at that point, and then you need to start looking at it again. And that's what we've been trying to do. We've been trying to be responsive to the comments that come through.
Yeah, and like we said earlier, it's an ever-evolving sport, so you guys have to evolve as well. Awesome.
Obviously, you we're talking about the British Championships at the end of the season. But what would it take for the BDGA to be able to schedule a full tour list with dates and venues to release prior to the season starting?
So I mean, that's a great question. And effectively, those who are as old and has been playing this as long as Paul and I, we'll know is that's what it used to be like. So it used to be that there was 10 events, they were all put in the calendar the previous year, and it was all scheduled out. Obviously, with the increasing number of people and the increasing number of people wanting to put on events, that was changed to try and make it flexible and adaptable for people to put in events when they came up. Moving forward, though, one of the things we were looking to launch just before Christmas, or you know, in November, but we put off because of COVID, was an update to the way that the tour is run and managed, which does involve trying to fix those tour events or key tour events at the start of the year, the big two-day events. And we want to get that in there so people can plan their diary. But we also still want to leave space for people to put on one-day events, events that are perhaps easier for people to go and do nearby or in a day. So that is part of the plan and the strategy. It's part of the pyramid idea. We just had to put it off this year in terms to allow flexibility for people to put events when it was safe to do so.
Because that sort of seems like it sort of coincides with one another, that you, if you have the tour dates, the big tour dates set in place, it helps the smaller tournaments be able to arrange their calendar to see what dates are available to, because obviously they're not going to want to run a tournament on a big tour date.
You're spot on. And what this does come down to, and it's a shameless plug again, if people can contact Phil, if they'd like to put on one of these events, that would be great. We're looking at the 2022 season, and we're looking to start fixing those in the calendar so that we can get all those out to everyone as soon as we can. That would be brilliant.
Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's a dude in Manchester that also does a podcast. I hear he's pretty good with a computer. So maybe he can build something for you guys. I don't know. I'm just saying. And that kind of leads to the next question, right? I'm great at segues. I took the speech class once in high school, and they always say transition.
The Dennis show.
Boom, sad. Would you guys, as an organization, be willing to implement a one-stop shop for people to be able to register and see all the tournaments? And to make it mandatory for all TDs to use that if they want to hold a BDGA sanctioned event or something that gets tour points. So basically, rather than having to always
disc golf scene.
Exactly. So I don't have to look at this Facebook page and that Facebook page, and hopefully I see something on Twitter. Is there a way that we can have one website or one app that has all the tournaments and you go there to register?
That sounds like nirvana. It sounds excellent.
You're welcome. I'll give that one to you for free.
Obviously, going back to, again, I don't want to dwell on it, but the old days, it was easier to do when there were 10 events. You know, they were all fixed in the calendar early. You would know that the who the contact was because it was on a list. This is a constant mission to try and, you know, not only gather the people who are putting on events, but also to encourage more people to do so. We've got places to try and store that information. We've got places for TDs to put that info on dates they plan to arrange a tournament so that other TDs know. We've got some of that. But what thing we want to avoid is putting obstacles in the way of TDs putting on events. Now, a lot of what you said could be a help. It could be this is what you need to do to run an event. And we do have guidance for TDs for that. But some people want to do things a certain way, and we certainly don't want to stand in the way of them putting on fantastic events for everyone. So we do have a delicate balance there again. But your point's fair, and we will always talk about that.
I think the community coming together, you know, helping each other out, because some of these guys that are running these events are of a slightly older generation. And you might talk about, we're just going to set this up on Disc Golf Scene. We need some of the younger guys to sort of band together and show them the ropes. So again, volunteering to assist with Phil, get on board with, you know, on with us on the board. Like I say, we have spaces and groups set up for TDs and supporting of that. And yeah, it's definitely something that we will put to them. If that's the one thing that comes back at the AGM this year, is that everybody wants one sole dedicated place to register and find these events, then, you know, we will step up and we will make that happen. Because, you know, as Sam said, that is the nirvana of it all. But, you know, I think again with that as well, though, that, you know, if you start doing it in that format, that then brings its own, not problems, but its own situation. So you might then start seeing registration open up to MPO first, as you do in some of the other pro events. And then we get back onto the question of the MA4 guys. What happens if, when it gets down to there's no spaces left for those guys? So then we have to start telling TDs, well, you know, we need to set so many spaces at these events. So these are a lot of conversations that we are more than happy to have, and we are lucky to be having, because we've got enough players wanting to, you know, make that a problem for us, which is brilliant. You know, we wholeheartedly enjoy it. But yeah, it's something that will definitely happen in the future. I mean, I can say all this because this is all Phil's problem. I just have to, you know, communicate it. I'm basically just, you know, sorry, Phil, but yeah, deal with this later.
The way I sort of see it is you need some form of structure, but equally you don't want to stop this organic growth that's happening at the moment, do you? So you've got to try and find the middle ground in a way, and it's pretty much impossible, isn't it?
Yeah, and there will always be someone who's unhappy about something.
Yeah,
and in general, the people who are unhappy are the people who, you know, make talk about it a lot, and those who are happy about something tend to recede. So a lot of our job is about talking to and trying to let people know who are unhappy about something, that we do think about them as well. But we never hear from anyone about the good things.
Oh no, of course you won't. Yeah.
All right. So one last question, and this is maybe a bit selfish on my point, but I'm a very selfish person. So last year I told myself that 2021, I was going to join the tour, right? I wanted to play all the tournaments I could. I wanted to see the country, and I wanted to do this. You just said, if we had a single point of entry, then you would have to open up registration, you know, for MPO first. And that makes sense, right? Again, they're professionals, and I agree with that. But what are your thoughts on providing those British players who have the intention to be on the tour to get priority to the events that have tour points, whether that's a fee that they would pay for the, you know, before the season starts? I'm throwing out numbers, you know, hey, you pay £50 because you want to be a tour player. Now you have priority to enter all of the tournaments that you want. Or, you know, if you don't want to take money, everybody wants to take money. But if you didn't and just said, hey, you know, who are the tour players? And not just, I'm going to play a few tournaments, but I want to be on the tour. So is there any thoughts about giving priority to those that want to be on the tour for their respective divisions, whatever divisions that you guys choose to have?
Well, that is a really, again, another tricky question. I mean, if we put that into perspective, last year, I think we had over 150 people playing and recording points on the tour. So if every event had 72 places, straight away, we've got half missing out on events. And that doesn't even cover the new players who we've all said that we want to encourage and we want to be able to support their growth. So that is a really tricky thing to be able to say to people, right? The people who can afford it,
that's what can, that would be my view as well,
sign up to the tour at the start of the year. But the people who might join during the year, sorry, all the places are already taken. we want to look after the current players, but we also want to, you know, encourage the newer players. And I think maybe the answer is more about making sure there's more events. How can we encourage more events so that people get their hit of the events that they want to do? So maybe the newer players can play the local events and have the regional tour competitions. You know, I know that Rich has been doing a great job in having little regional tours the regional tour that encourages local people and has local competition. But, you know, maybe we need to be able to encourage some of those people on and look after the other existing players as well. It's difficult to make it more exclusive like that.
Because my issue has been, hold on, sorry, Paul. My issue with that has been, so again, I'm playing with Bedworth coming up and Bedworth just happened. You know, those people that pay to be a Bedworth member got first priority. So now I've paid for that. I wanted to play Manchester. So now I've paid them and their club money. And again, for me personally, that's okay because I want to support it. So I've paid them money to be able to register. And then same thing with all the clubs. You know, I can't do the North Devon Open or a couple of these others.
We tried to do the same in Nottingham, but we wasn't able to get in.
Yeah. So we're paying to be members of these clubs so that we could get early priority. However, now I'm paying extra money as well as the tournament fees, but also one day, hopefully, we'll have clubs playing clubs. Well, now I'm a member of three different clubs. What club do I play for? I'll play for whoever it'll take me. But that's kind of where my question on the priority takes place. And I understand that somebody says, I want to be a tour player. That doesn't mean they play all the events, right? We have pros in the States that don't play all the events. You set your schedule, you know, because we can't make everything. And not everybody wants to be a touring person here in the country. They just want to play one or two tournaments. And that's kind of where that question stemmed from. So, Paul, what were your thoughts?
Well, there is an easy answer to this. It might not necessarily help with your seeing more of the country. But if events become more, I want to say exclusive, what was the word that we used for the British and Irish tour? It was there was a word for it. Sam will come up with it in a second. I'm sure I'll remember it. But we wanted to elevate the
prestige.
So we wanted to make more prestigious events. Now, with prestigious events will come higher entry fees. So your money will maybe be better spent there. And then the more that these prestigious events, depending on how well they do, with the footfall, then the following years they will grow and grow to the point where you see the likes of Las Vegas paying out, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. So I think that, you know, if we start having more prestigious events around the country, which is what we had set up with the British and Irish majors, the likes of yourself are going to want to pay to enter into those. And the people that have only been playing for 3 months might think, well, actually, no, I'm not going to spend £100 entering this event. But, you know, the likes of yourself might say, yeah, actually, that's where I want to be. Mm-hmm. Now, the other side of this as well is that what we were talking earlier, where your money could be maybe better spent becoming a better player, increasing your player rating. So then you start spending more money on yourself. And then when the opportunity comes to say, right, we're going to open to players above 950 first, you can say, hey, I've spent, you know, several hundred pounds over the last year going to courses, paying the green fees, buying the discs, paying for tuition, and then backhanders. And then maybe you'll be that guy. So there are other ways of still spending that money and investing in the sport. But yeah, I mean, joining lots of clubs, great. You know, if you can afford to do that, I'd say support as many clubs as you possibly can. That's a wonderful thing to do. I don't think you necessarily have to be a member of the club to see, you know, so much of the country. You can definitely just go and play. which is where bag tags and things comes into it as well. So that introduces the competitive side of it. And again, you can invest in a bag tag. So you could maybe meet up with, you know, organize a day, right? You know, we're going to come up, the four of us, and we're going to go and play. Does anyone else want to come and join us and we'll play for tags and things? So there are other ways around that. Now, yeah, I mean, your idea is great. Pay more money to the BDGA. Brilliant. We'll take the money. We'll set up a special, you know, elitist club, and you get entry into certain events, and I'll start running those events and taking all your money off.
And again, it's not
on behalf of the BDJ, I should say.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Again, it's not about the money, right? For all the listeners, I
yeah, no, obviously,
it's not about the money. It's the idea. Was there a way to set a priority? And I get it. It's not an easy question to answer. It's not something you can answer right away. However, you know, I understand. I think we understand that we have the young new players, and I like the grassroots idea, and I like the growing. So it's there. I just think that those are some of the gripes and complaints that the community has right now. And there's probably many more that we missed. However, those are the ones we were able to cover.
I was going to say, just to add one thing, this is a fairly new, that the idea that every tournament sells out didn't happen before last year. It didn't happen. Like, one might sell out during the year. That was it.
So you're this saying, is like, so you're saying since the podcast has come on online,
that's it.
all the tournaments have started. I mean, it might be a coincidence, but
you know, I know that when I, it was last summer when I actually like fell in love with the sport, and it's been my goal to become a better player, obviously, and to win and be competitive. But more than that, you know, I'm old. I'm never going to be a professional disc golfer. I'm never going to be the best. I'm past my prime. However, I want to pass this sport on. I want to grow this sport. And for me, it's the chance to do that in whatever way possible. You know, I met Bowen and Duffy, and we just gotten on great, and we started this podcast, and this is our way of giving back to the community, getting information out there. But that's what's important to me. It's not what division I'm in, who am I playing, what tournament am I going to, but how can I spread this sport? How can I share this sport, and how can I grow this sport? And that's my goal. And I think that's a lot of people, the people who have started businesses and doing t-shirts, doing merchandise, doing podcasts. I think that's our overall goal, is we want to share the love that we have for the sport and kind of get it out there to everybody else. Awesome. Well, all right. So two more things and then we are done. We could talk all night long. This is your opportunity for you two to pitch us, to give information to all 12 of our listeners, what's going on, what you guys have coming up, what information you want to share with everybody.
Wow. Do you want to go first, Paul?
Not really.
That's the communications director, by the way.
All I would say is obviously, you know, first and foremost, become a member of the British Disc Golf Association. That way, you know, you're gonna see at least several of my well put together newsletters with all of our upcoming projects in them. Obviously, you know, if you can follow us on all the usual socials, I'm out there, one man army. Running the Twitter, Insta, Facebook.
I feel that pain.
Yeah.
You've got a Reddit yet? Have you got a Reddit yet, Paul?
No, I've sort of left Reddit to the subreddit community. I think that's I think that's Richard Hatton's world. He's the keyboard warrior. I'm just trying to build the community however I can, and if that means introducing, you know, the other week, there's a load of players in Cambridge that contacted me saying, you know, oh, there's three or four of us playing here in Cambridge. Do you know of anyone else? And I say, yeah, hell yeah, I do. I've introduced them to Cambridge Disc Golf, and they go, oh, right, these guys are playing. So now they've started meeting up and playing together. Brilliant. Well, hang about. you guys are really close to Milton Keynes. Milton Keynes guys, do you know about the Cambridge guys? Oh, no, we didn't. Oh, well, there you go. Now, these guys are going to meet up in a week or two. Yeah, that's what I, that's all I'm trying to do is just grow the community, keep it healthy, and yeah, and just share as much as we can.
Perhaps if I was to add something to it from a national director's point of view, I think one thing that I've seen over the last sort of 10 years is people who volunteer to be on the board for the BDJ are in general very nice and social and friendly people who people can approach and talk to about something. But what I think we have all been guilty of in the past is being very reactionary, and we want to make sure that everyone's happy, which is obviously sometimes impossible. So one of the things that I've been looking at recently is how we can make what we're trying to achieve be more strategic, and how can we work out what we want to achieve and come up with a plan of how to get to the stepping stones to do that. So picking up on something that Tom Lowe started a few years ago, we've been working on the strategic development plan that we're planning to use as our tool to understand what we're trying to achieve over the year, what budgets we might need for that, what support we might need for that in terms of skills or in terms of resourcing, you know, from support from other people. And we're trying to use that as a way of encouraging more people to help out the disc golf community. Because, you know, from my point of view, the BDJ isn't five people on a board. The BDJ is all of us members who are all trying to, you know, grow the sport or enjoy the sport in our own way. It's very interesting moving onto a board of an organization, because suddenly people deal with you very differently. But I feel like I'm a lover of disc golf like anyone else, and I feel like I like going out and having a round with my mates, and just because I've volunteered to be on a board doesn't mean I'm suddenly not a sort of approachable person who's trying to do something positive. But what, as part of that, what we're looking to do is probably set up a development group, which we're going to task with a set of key strategic goals that might, you know, the things that we think are going to make the biggest difference to the growth of disc golf in the UK. So, for example, trying to come up with a club pack, like what information does a group of people need in order to set up a club? Now, that's from the point of view of positions on a board, to the point of view of needing to have an AGM, to, you know, all of this kind of stuff that people may not know. What kind of information might people need when they're trying to apply to set up a disc golf course? We've started some case studies to sort of show how you can put a disc golf course in a public park, and, you know, how that might work with the local authority. This is all stuff that we're trying to do, and there's a list that's huge, massive list. And at the moment, you know, we're five people. We're trying to get some other people involved, but we really love support, and our strategic development plan will be the thing to specifically ask some people to help with some very specific items.
Yeah, that's...
I'm biting in again. Oh, screw you, Dennis.
fine.
The BDJ, it is its membership, and it is disc golf is the community, you know. So many of us come from different backgrounds, but it's our love of playing this sport that brings us all together. And I, you know, on a personal note, I just like to say thank you to everyone for last year, for, you know, sticking by us, for making it, you know, at no point was any of the meetings that we had ever predicted or ever easy. You know, telling people that actually, right, the government guidance is that all golf courses are closed, therefore, you know, we have also decided that this golf course is closed. I never wanted to be the guy to say that to everybody, but people respected that, they followed it, and now we've come back stronger than ever. And you know, that's down to everybody, that's not down to us. We are just, you know, five guys at the spearhead of it all, but it's the ideas from yourselves, it's the communicating to each other and helping each other out and coming through with this stuff, and help him wherever you can, that's going to see it grow and grow.
Well, I think Dennis has got something to say to you lads and the board anyway, haven't you, Dennis?
Yeah, so one big takeaway for all the listeners is volunteer. Run events, get in touch with Sam, with Paul, somebody. Figure out how you can be a TD. We want tournaments, and the only way that we're going to get more tournaments is if we have more TDs and more people running. I am sure that courses out there aren't going to mind if on a Saturday or Sunday that there's a tournament. So volunteer to run tournaments. Same thing, you know, I think my BDGA numbers like 1792 or something like that. That means there's at least 1800 people, right, that are members. One of you has a certain set of skills, you know, let them know what your skill is. And if they need you, help them out. Because like they said, we make up the BDGA, not the five members on the board. We're members, it's our association, and we need to help grow sport. But this is what I really want to say. So we all know that the BDGA is run by volunteers. And you guys do this on your own personal time. You guys have lives and families and regular jobs. And this is very much a thankless task. We and many others throughout the UK just wanted to say that we are forever thankful and grateful for all the tasks that you guys do behind the scenes and the things that you have to deal with and spend a huge amount of your time on. So from the bottom of our hearts and from all the BDGA members around the country, thank you for everything that you do for us. We do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Cheers, guys. Welcome.
Awesome. Well, gentlemen, thank you for coming on the show.
One more thing. That was pre-written before Sam tried to fish for a compliment earlier by saying,
"Man, so you didn't have to tell me that I wrote it down already." Like that was deep and heartfelt. It just ruined it. But gentlemen, thank you for coming on the show. We do really appreciate it. I hope that the listeners had some of their questions answered. And I'm assuming, Paul, that if they have any more questions, they're more than welcome to
my send door you a is message. Always open by awesome. Whatever means you can get to it.
Perfect.
I'm always listening.
Go to Paul's house and he'll have a beer for you.
yeah.
That's what I heard. Yeah. No, seriously, send these guys a message if you have any questions or concerns. Again, we just sat here for an hour and talked to them, and we probably got some of the most truthful answers we've ever gotten. So, gentlemen, again, thank you. And we'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Sam and Paul, for that great interview. That was amazing. Their answers were just out of this world. What did you guys think about the interview?
I thought it was really, really useful, really, because there's a lot of people have their own sort of interpretations on how they would run it or what they would do differently, and it's not always the easiest to sort of transmit information out of a sort of an association like that. And I think coming onto a podcast like this, it gives people the opportunity to listen and sort of have stuff like the MA4 division. It gets put into context rather than just putting out in a sort of a factual document. You can see the thing, they can explain the thinking behind it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot easier to understand in this way of communicating, of having, you know, questions and answers, and they're able to gather the thoughts rather than write it out on Facebook and then on Instagram and then in the newsletter. You know, this is a good way to get that information out. And like you said, it put a whole new perspective on things, and the reasoning for why they did stuff made a lot of sense. I know that everybody's not going to be happy still with their answers, but that's life, right? But as any organization, they're growing, they're making decisions, and they're sticking by their decisions, and I respect that. So I have a lot of respect for those guys, a lot of time for them. And one of the things that we talked about in the interview, and that's how we closed it off, is If we are the members of the BDGA, so it's our responsibility to become tournament directors and to run events and to open leagues and clubs and to volunteer and to help them. That's how we're going to make it better. We cannot just rely on these five people to do everything for us. We need to step up and take the responsibility ourselves. Bowen, what did you think?
I like to think that we didn't make it too easy for them. I feel like we have the sort of voice to ask these questions.
It's like Paxman on it in parts.
It was like the bits that Duffy had to edit out got real heated, didn't they?
The swearing and all that sort of stuff.
I tell you what, they say some horrible things like when they think they're not being filmed, don't they?
Sam throwing his chair across the room.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought they explained themselves well. I think they've got their heads screwed on. I think there's a lot of things that need implementing in the next couple of years, but it's about having the foresight to be able to do that. And I know that coronavirus has made everything harder, but hopefully with the sort of issue going away, we're hoping this year, it'll become a lot more clearer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they also understand their limitations, right? They understand that the choices and decisions that they make as an association and as a governing body, because that's what they are, aren't going to please everybody. And they get that. And they really do try their best to make everybody happy. However, in the world we live in, not everybody's going to be happy. But that's life. And you know what? The only way to make it better is to give them feedback, constructive feedback. Do not become keyboard warriors and yell at them just because you didn't like their answer. But have good constructive criticism on how they can become better. And then volunteer to help and make it better. That's what I got to say.
We need more tournament directors. That is a thing that needs addressing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bowen's desperate to shoot more 72 over rounds.
Yeah, he is.
Just wait till Bedworth. Just wait till Bedworth.
All right. Yes, we're going to wait. So everybody, thank you again for listening to this interview. It was very special for us. It means a lot to us. And so that's why we're doing a special two episodes this week, because we want to give you guys our normal episode as well. So please enjoy this episode. And remember, our normal content is going to be coming out this Saturday, where we talk about all the things that we normally talk about. So thank you guys for listening. And like always, keep it in the chains.
Keep it in the chains.
Keep it in the chains. Two for the price of one.
Thanks for listening to In the Chains. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you like the show, please leave us a review. Until next time, keep it in the chains.